Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
My name is Tai Mei Lay, and I am a comedian and digital content creator.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over. What's up, Tai Mei? How are you?
Hi. Good morning. I'm doing well this morning. How are you doing?
Good. I'm trying to make things awkward. And, you know, we're talking about awkwardness before the...
You can't be more awkward than me. Like, I'll make you feel awkward.
Yeah, and I bring that up because in the videos, you have a lot of energy that you bring to the table. And then, you know, we're talking about in real life, you are quite the opposite. And I find that to be true with a lot of comedians.
Yeah, I think that there's like disappointment when people like see me in public and they're like, oh my God, like, aren't you like Dear Diary? And I'm just like, oh, like, hi, yes. I get kind of embarrassed, to be honest, just because the character is so different from me in real life, obviously. And she's just like a lot more excited, and she's an opportunity for me to just like be creative and let my ideas out and like get out of my own head, I guess, because I'm just like, I think I like to describe myself as boring. Like if you ask my friends and family, they'll be like, no. But I'm like, I just kind of like look at everyone around me and I'm just like, I'm just gonna go walk my dog, or I'm gonna go watch King of the Hill. Like, there's not a lot.
And to give everybody a perspective of who you are online, I mean, racking up almost 150,000, you know, subscribers and followers on Instagram, it's no easy feat. It takes a lot of work and a lot of just a lot of grit. You know, is the word I'm looking for. It takes a lot of grit to even pass 100,000, you know, Instagram followers. And when I think about that, I think that the vibe that you bring on your everyday laid back, you're really chill, it's very different from what you have to bring out on these videos. It's a lot of different energy. And so you saying that it's like this kind of alter ego, so you can explore different ideas. Where did that all come from?
So she doesn't have a name. Everyone just calls her Dear Diary. I had never named her. And it started actually in like 2013. But it wasn't like public. I would just do it for my friends and family. Because my family immigrated here in 1975, like a lot of us. And growing up, I would hear stories of like what it was like to come here in 1975 and not know English and have to learn. Like they lived was Arkansas. Like they came here and they went to Arkansas, and then it was just obviously like a culture shock. And then have to learn a new language, and they're around people, no one looks like them. And so I'd hear a lot of stories about like how difficult it was, but my family always made it like funny. They were like, oh, you know, like when we moved here, this and this happened, and they would make it funny. So I was like, what would it be like if they came here today? You know, and just kind of like rehashing those stories. And that's where it came from. I just did it for my family. And I was like, oh, you know, like Dear Diary today. And then just kind of go, and I had it on my Instagram for them, but I was in college at the time, and I was applying for a very prestigious scholarship, and I was like, I probably shouldn't have an online presence like this if I'm applying for this scholarship. And so I took like the there was like four videos. I like took them all down. And then I like minimized my online presence to be very professional because I wanted to work in higher education. I wanted to be like a dean of student affairs at the community college level. And
That's very specific. I won't get into that. I'm like, that's a very specific
it
job.
is super specific job. That's like a whole nother
Yeah,
story.
we'll get into that because it's very different from comedy and what you do.
But so I took all of that down. I won the scholarship, and it's like the biggest scholarship, transfer scholarship, I think in the world, definitely in the country. It was basically a full ride for me to go to transfer to a 4 year from community college. And when I did that, and then I had the opportunity to continue that scholarship through graduate school. And I was like, I guess I'm gonna do like a couple more years.
Wow.
And then I did that. And so I graduated in 2021. And then I was applying for jobs, but like COVID really impacted higher education because enrollment rates fell and stuff like that. And so I couldn't find a job. I applied to like over 300 places
Oh,
and I couldn't
wow.
even, I got two interviews and they didn't go anywhere after that. And so I was just like, what am I going to do? And I had started a business with a couple friends that was just like a startup. It's a soil company. And so I was doing that and I was like, I need to find a job because I don't have my scholarships anymore. I'm living off my credit cards. And just kind of like in the tedium and the boredom of all of that, I started posting on TikTok for, my friends and family, because that's who followed me. And then they just kind of went viral from there. And I just kind of like fell into it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And my mom has always wanted me to be an entertainer. My mom has always been like, you're so funny. You should be in movies. You should do this. She's always like encouraged that. But I was like too kind of shy. And then it just kind of kept growing. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll just keep doing this. And then on TikTok, I started getting opportunities to like monetize through making ads for brands. And that started paying my bills. And I was like, I kind of don't have to look for a job anymore. And I can do this. And it wasn't until this February that I decided, like, I'm gonna take comedy more seriously. Like, I have a lot of opportunity here. I grew my channels relatively quickly because I've only been doing this since like March of last year, 2023. And that's how I ended up here. And that's
What do you
where the
think?
character came from. I brought the character back. That's this whole roundabout story, but
Yeah.
that's how she came back. So I used to do it in 2013 for like my friends and family, even did like on Facebook and stuff, and then the scholarship and school. And so like I was like, I can't have stuff like that on the internet of me.
You
And
know
then I
who
was like, I can't get a job.
you know who else follows a kind of similar trajectory is Subdoc. You know who that is?
We follow each other and I think we've chatted a little bit, but I don't know his story.
Yeah, he started doing these characterizations of, these OG homies that he used to hang out with that were older than him, that were like my age. And he would sit for hours with these guys. And way back in the day, he started making these voices. And maybe 10, 15 years ago, he started doing around the homies and they would all laugh. And then, so that origin of that character that he does so well now comes from many, many years ago, just like you. And we all sit here and we could see in present time, in the current moment, we see the iterations of what you and Subdoc do, but these are like projections, holographic projections of a decade ago, over a decade ago for both of you.
Yeah, she's old.
And
But that's awesome. I didn't know. It's Subdoc?
Yeah, Supdoc. Supdawk.
Yeah, I have his Saigon hat on my
Yep,
wall.
that's it. That's right.
Yeah.
With the duck.
With the duck on it. Yeah. I have
Yep,
a
that's
sticker over
him.
here on my filing cabinet. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's awesome.
Yeah, these are voices that both of you have had for a long time. And you know, when I study other comedians too and interview them, I realize that the journey of getting to where you are when you explode on social media, a lot of this is like 10-year journeys plus. You know, guys like Stephen Ho, Linda Dong, all of these creators have spent many years in the trenches. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, I started like March 2023. But in reality, the startup date was much sooner than that to get it to where you are today. You know, it's rare that, you know, you just explode on the scene without any sort of practice, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. 'Cause yeah, she's just hasn't been online as long, you know. She's been
Yeah.
around, but
And you've mentioned that you've always wanted to be a comedian, but a comedian today has many different assignments and different valuable sort of content that you can do. And I think that being an online sort of social media comedian is very different from stand-up. Stand-up's very different from television comedians. And where do you want to eventually lot, you know, end up?
I have always really been into sketch comedy. Like, I grew up watching all that. I was like, wow, I would love to be on that show. Everyone on the show is so funny, you know? And then as I got older, then, you know, I was allowed to watch SNL, and that was like the dream, you know? I'm like, oh, I would love to be on SNL. Or even just as entertainment has evolved to just like have my own show like Key and Peele and just do sketch comedy. But I also
Those two guys are the gold standard for me. Key and Peele.
right.
Mark, just succinct. Just to the point, their comedy is just like brilliant.
Absolutely. I'm actually taking a sketch comedy writing workshop right now that I started 2 weeks ago. And the teacher, he was one of the principal writers for the Key and Peele show. So I'm like learning from the master right now. His name's Rich
Wow.
Tallarico. Yeah.
You know, can you share? I mean, you said you started 2 weeks ago.
The workshop. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a
the
6 week
workshop.
workshop.
Can you tell me basically it, forever? I know forever, for whatever it's worth, you've been with it for 2 weeks, and I'm sure you had to do some research to finally get there. What do you think is a special sauce in that show?
I think that the sketches that they kind of weren't afraid to push boundaries, and that it was really outside of the box thinking. It's like it was so outside the box, but like in the box, because like one of the most famous ones is like the substitute teacher. People still quote like A.A. Ron,
You hear it all the time.
and so, or even like the noise,
Yep,
you know,
noise. You hear
skit.
that all the time. You the Obama one, Obama like high five and everything. They just redid that, and Obama was like in like, I think was it the Olympic team, the Olympic basketball
Oh
team.
yeah,
He was
he
like,
showed up for the
he
Olympic
showed up, and
basketball.
then like you could see all the black players, like he's all high five of them, and then there's like white managers or whatever, and then he gives him a polite handshake.
The handshake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he,
Was he giving homage to Key and Peele? I mean, it's like so weird, right?
right. I'm like, is this real? But I mean, like, they had to come up, like, that came from somewhere, you know, they saw something. They weren't just like, wouldn't it be funny if Obama did this? You know, it was probably like through observation and then obviously kind of like extrapolating on that idea and going further. But there's so much that I'm learning in the class that, okay, so I know I'm like, I love sketch comedy. I've always wanted to do sketch comedy, but every single one of my videos is improvised. I don't script or write anything. A lot of people are like, how do you do this without laughing? And I'm like, oh, it's because I'm too busy thinking of the next thing to say.
Wow.
I have no idea like what's going to come out of my mouth. And so a lot of times, and I think that's another kind of like strange thing is that like recording these videos, I'm like sitting around or I'm doing whatever and I have an idea. I'll go into my car and it takes like a minute, 2 minutes, and I'll record it and then I'll edit it and post it. And it's so like that character is really such a small, tiny part of like me. And I'm like, I've had people tell me like, oh, if you know, like you could really develop this character. And I think part of me is because I have like imposter syndrome, you know, it's kind of happening like pretty fast. And I'm like, I'm not really like, it's not really that great. People aren't really like that, love it that much for me to really like deep dive into this character and create this storyline. Because some people have been like, oh, have you thought of like making like your own YouTube series and doing longer form content with her or filming it this way? And I'm like, well, I'm thinking about it now that you said it, but. That's something I do want to explore, and that's why I'm taking the classes because it's teaching me like how to sit down and write and be more intentional. And because I look at a lot of my videos and I'm like, okay, I could have changed this or I could have modified this. I could have went deeper with this joke, and that's really what I'm being taught in the
Yeah.
class.
I'm glad to hear that. I think I would agree with the people that have suggested that you develop it more, because I think that when you possess a certain talent and ability, if you become more intentional about the work, you project it even you elevate the talent and you elevate the intentions. And you could punch it up. I mean, let's face it, why would, you know, these writers get paid all this money to write for comedy shows, right? But
Right.
you know, they get paid so much, and there's, you know,
Do
a whole
they?
army.
Do
Oh
they
my
get paid
God.
a lot?
Totally.
They went on strike, though.
No, a strike just means they want to get paid more. It's like, no.
Fair.
No, I think they get paid a lot. I mean, I'm talking about like at the late night, you know, talk show level, SNL level, you know, at the levels that are at the top of the game, they get paid quite a bit. And, you know, I think they get paid because it's a discipline. You have to be disciplined at coming up with funny things. And what you're saying mirrors what Subdoc does. Subdoc, again, I'll bring this up because he said the same thing. I was like, he said that he goes and he just hits record, and he, you know, his thing is about making parodies of like old Family Guy clips, or you know, he takes clips of old cartoons, and he reframes it with the Vietnamese accent, Vietnamese American
Right.
English accent. And he goes, I don't write it, I don't script it out, I just hit record and I just go. And it's very similar to what you are saying. And I'm like, now imagine if you and him, I'm just saying, got together and created a Key and Peele type show with intention and putting together very focused energy. Imagine what comes out of that kind of creation. And so I think that it's a really amazing journey that you're taking the steps to go and do a proper class.
Thanks. Yeah, one of my friends who lives in LA, because I'm in San Diego, she lives in LA, and I see her because I do all my videos by myself, even like when I'm playing multiple characters. Sometimes my cousin, when she's not touring, she will do a video with me. A lot of times it's like her content and I'll just like be in character with it, but most of the time it's just me by myself and my tripod or my steering wheel. And you know, sometimes I play Dear Diary and then I'll play Peggy. Sometimes I've brought in Miss Swan, from Mad TV. And my friend in LA, I was like, how did you have all these people to record with? You know, like where did you meet like this community? And she was telling me about like she was going to like a comedy school in LA, like a really famous one, and was like, oh, I met them here. I think like you would do great. They have online classes if you don't want to come up to LA. And that's kind of like she told me that months ago, and I was like, do I want to like invest in that and like take the time and money and energy? And then my sister was like, why not? Like, I mean, you can't get worse, right? And if she was like, if you want to take this more seriously, then you absolutely should. And I was like, okay, let's do this. Let's be more intentional.
Yeah. Which program did you do?
For
Oh, the one that, what did she do? Which program did she meet on?
Oh, my friend, she's going into the ground. She's part of the Groundlings in LA.
Groundlings. Okay.
They have like most, a lot of SNL cast members came out of there, you know.
Yep. I was in music school right after 9/11, 2001. I went back to school for music. And I'll never forget the one class that we had to take. It was an improvising class for singing. And we would stand in a school circle, like 12 of us would stand in a school circle. They'd give us a melody like, Route 66. Everybody knows that song, Route 66. And if you didn't know it, they just played for you a few times. And then so you would go around the school circle and you would improvise the lyrics to that melody. And I found that exercise to be so powerful. And I go back to it all the time because it's a muscle. It's a muscle to think about how to land musically or melodically on a certain beat. And I think that that kind of training expands our ability in the arts or the creative aspect that we're in. And I think, I don't know what the exercises for you are when you're writing from this veteran Key and Peele writer, but I'd like to hear, I know it's only been 2 weeks, but some of the exercises or things that they're asking you to think about.
So we did, we kind of, they break it down. Pardon me. So it's so funny because I come from like an education background. Like that's one of my master's is in education. And like everything can be broken down and taught. And for whatever reason, I didn't ever think that
Framework.
comedy was going to like have these same principles and elements. So we have to kind of like create jokes and share them in class, and then we dissect, the type of joke that it is. Like, oh, was this like exaggeration? Was this like unlikely explanation and things like that. And so, he's like, oh, you have like this amount of time to create this, and then you have to present it with your peers, and then we go over it. And it's like a great experience. Like, so I have been feeling kind of like in a like creative rut, and when I'm in class, I'm like, wow, I thought of this, I thought of this. Like, it feels really good. And I think that part of it is because it's so different from what I've been doing for like the past year. And it is like getting back into like a groove of like school, because I was in school for
Yeah, many
like
years, right?
6 years, seven, no, like 8 years, like full time, because I pursued two bachelors at once, and then I pursued two masters at once. And it,
When you look back, do you regret all those years that you spent doing something that has nothing to do with what you're doing now?
no. No, I absolutely. So my educational journey, I was working for Radio Shack for a long time. I was a manager of like, I think I managed like five or six different stores across the time
The
that I
young
was
audience,
there.
the young audience is like, what's who is what is Radio Shack?
Actually, no, I don't have like a lot of younger, like most of my followers are like 24 plus. I never talk about like when I used to work at Radio Shack, but it was kind of really weird because of the customers that would go there. They're just kind of like older men. And I started in Tucson when I lived in Arizona, and it would be really weird because I would answer the phone and like answer their questions, and I'd be like, oh, like thanks for calling Radio Shack. This is Time A, blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, "Hey, Penny, I'm looking for a resistor, blah, blah, like, do you have this rheostat, whatever?" And I'm just like, "Oh, yeah, definitely. It's in the parts store. If you come on in, can show you." And then they would show up, and then they'd like look past me.
Looking for
And I'd,
Penny.
looking
They're
for
looking for
Penny.
Penny.
And I'd be like, "Hi, like, yeah, you called me. There's only like two people who work in this store." And they'd be like surprised that I was Asian. And then they'd be like, "Oh, I thought that you were." And I was like, "White? Like, what do you mean? No, oh, you don't, you speak English very well."
Oh
And I'm
my God,
like,
so you got that a lot.
I got that a lot. And I was like, I was born in Wisconsin, like I grew up in Phoenix. Like, yes, I speak English very well. And it would be really extra weird sometimes because they would like walk in and it would be like they saw a ghost. They'd be like, and then they'd come up to me really close and they'd be like, "You remind me of this woman when I served in Vietnam."
Oh
And
shit.
they would sometimes
No
allude that I could be like their love child or something.
way. Yeah,
It was really
wow.
weird. And I was like, I was born in the 80s and I know both of my parents and I am not your like long lost child with whatever
That's
woman you met during the war. It was,
crazy.
yeah, it was really weird. But
Disturbing.
yeah. And it happened like pretty regularly, like different people or men, and I would just be like, that's just like a weird thing that I don't think like most people
Experience.
experience.
But you know what? When I think about it, I don't think it's the men's fault. I really think that this is actually a byproduct of war. Because their experience, if it's happening so often to you, it's like it's in their psyche, and they probably don't really know how to expend that energy somehow, somewhere. When they're hit with the trigger of it, they're like, whoa. They probably never processed all this stuff either. But I do want to ask you a question as I'm listening to this story. When we are looking at Dear Diary and the clips that you put out, you speak in a different dialect. You speak in a different English dialect that is, it's a riff on Vietnamese sort of accent. And I wonder when I watch it, I'm like, do you ever think that this is sort of, I don't know, ammunition for, people who are, white people or people who are not Vietnamese, that they'll just build up on the caricatures of, Asian people who can't speak English?
I think about that a lot, actually, because there's always someone in the comments that are like, "You are dishonoring your culture and your ancestors and all of these things." And I'm just like, I'm not perpetuating any stereotypes intentionally. I'm not sitting here. A lot of people are like, "Oh, do like, everyone wants me to do like Angela Johnson, like, oh, you went to crypto jail? Everyone wants to see that." And I'm like, I have a bunch of family members that do nails, and I'm not gonna like go out of my way and like build that into the character. I'm very intentional on just making it like weird, not weird, but like interpretations of just like the American English language and our slang and the idioms. And so I'm not sitting out here and I'm like, I'm a really bad driver, or, I'm like eating domestic pets and stuff like that. And so I also don't specifically go for a just straight up a Vietnamese accent. A lot of people are like, it sounds like Asian with Jamaican or Irish or something. It's just like visually like, yeah, I'm Asian, but I intentionally have like a different accent, so to speak. And my sister doesn't like it. My sister's like, "I don't like that you do it with the accent. You're so much funnier just in general without the accent." And I'm like, "But the jokes that I'm making don't make sense if I speak like this, because people would be like, you're just being stupid. Like, you know what that means. You speak English, you have an American accent." And so it just makes more sense for me to have sort of like the Asian accent, but I don't feel like the way that I portray the character makes it's like, oh, you're like a dumb Asian person or whatever. It's just like, because I have people from a bunch, like all ethnicities, like are like, oh my gosh, this is so funny. This is just like my mom or my dad or my uncle or my grandparents. Because we're in America and this is like, no, unless you're like an indigenous person, you're like not from here. And so a lot of people had to learn and adapt and figure out like what all this means. And sometimes it's just like even us as Americans learning like the hip new language from the kids, like what are they saying now? Like Sigma and Riz and things like that. And so just playing
I'm
on
all for
that.
comedians, saying and doing whatever they feel like doing. And I think that, hearing the backside, the mechanical side, the inside of the motors, how it's grinding and the wheels turning inside your brain, it's interesting to hear it. And, I think that you're saying that you're not here to perpetuate stereotypes. And I think that, we should have the freedom to make whatever jokes we want if it's not harming other people, right? If it's not
Right.
really putting other people down. And you happen to be an Asian woman, so why not be able to bust out whatever caricature thing that you want to do? And I
Right,
think
to
a
lean
lot of people
into
might
it.
have problems with that line of thinking, but I think you should just be able to really say whatever you want. That all being said, I would, for me, those are great. And I want to actually hear, I would be interested to hear the vulnerable things that you think about in some of these clips. And here's where I'm modeling it from. There are thoughts that I get from you that there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of suffering in the in probably the years that you were growing up outside of the Vietnamese community, perhaps, and that, making it all into comedy is great and it's entertaining. But I, as a human being who's interested in authenticity, would also love to hear in like, a 30-second clip or a minute clip of something that is on the flip side, the underbelly of where some of the video content comes from. I'd be interested in that. That's just me. So it's not a
Like a
but an
behind the
and.
scenes or
Yes.
like
Yeah.
VH1 behind the music, but it's like
Yeah.
behind the Instagram reel.
Behind the Instagram. I that's just
Sometimes it's not that deep. So,
me.
like the first, I think the first, like the biggest, my first like really viral video was like the peanut butter and KY jelly video. That was back when I was still kind of doing just a more Vietnamese accent, less like the. Because I've in my mind, it's like the accent now is it, I pay homage to my family. Like I mix a little bit of like American Southern with the Vietnamese accent, because that's where our America origin story is. But like that video, I was just watching TV one night and a KY Jelly commercial came on and I was just like, wouldn't it be so funny if like when my family came here and they wanted to try this sandwich, because like I think at the time it was very popular on TikTok, like people in other countries were trying like peanut butter jelly sandwiches because they're so popular here and I guess they're not in other countries. And I was like, wouldn't it be so funny if someone just like thought that this jelly commercial was like a jelly commercial? And that's all that was, and sometimes it's just that.
Yeah.
But other times, like there's like a Supercuts one that I talk about with like the perm, and she kept calling it sperm, and she's like crying, and a lot of people were like, I don't know whether to feel bad or to like laugh because she's like legitimate. I was legitimately crying in that video. I was like, could you imagine like this poor woman who just doesn't speak English well and is just being misunderstood? And I'm like crying in my car. And then I like come out of my car and I'm fine. But that is like, yeah, just that comes from like the idea of what it is like to, it's scary to be in an unfamiliar place and not be able to communicate properly.
But, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking it's scary for us because we understand English. But many times if you don't understand the other language, it's not as scary because you're just like thinking in your
right?
own language,
you're
right?
like, why don't they get it?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, you're like,
I just want my hair to be curly. Like,
yeah, you're not necessarily afraid of what they're thinking. You're just like, why can't they understand me? And how do I get to have them understand me? You know, I wanted to know if you were, maybe you've already answered this in other video clips, but what about stand-up comedy?
That's probably like the number one requested thing that I get is like, can you tour and do stand-up? Or I've only tried it once. I did like a 3 minutes open mic set earlier this year locally here in San Diego, and
yeah,
it was the scariest thing I've ever
I saw
done.
That post. I saw that post before you and I were even introduced. I saw it like way long time ago. That post, because I always think about like when social media comedians go on to become stand-up comedians, how scary that is. So that was like one thing that caught my attention right away, and I wanted to get into that. How did you do?
People who know me very well could tell I was nervous, but just the general public was like, you did so well, that room was dead, shame on them. And I was like, there was like only 8 people there. There was not a lot of people there. And that's why I chose that venue. I was like, because I don't know how to talk or speak into the microphone. I don't know how to move my body when I'm quote unquote on stage. And so I picked something smaller, more intimate, that was like not as popular as like Mic Drop or the Comedy Store out here. You know, I picked a dive bar, and it was so scary. Even with like not that many people there, I had rehearsed so much at home, just 3 minutes. And then when I got there, there were other people who were before me, and I was like having a panic attack. I was like, oh my God, I have to go after this girl. And so I went outside to like catch my breath and be like, it's okay. It's just, there's like 8 people in there. What's wrong with you? And I think she thought I was being rude, like stepping out of her set. And so when I was up there, she was like,
oh, shit.
The whole time. And so I'm just like doing it. And I'm like, don't look at her. She's mad at you right now. You know? And I was like, that just made it worse. But I thought I was going to like pee my pants, poop and vomit,
yeah,
and pass out all at the same time. And I went through that set a lot faster than I should have, because I was like, I wasn't taking like the pauses that I needed to. I do love like the support and encouragement from like all my followers and stuff, from like all, you know, because I'm on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. Like, they're all so supportive, and they're like, come to this city and do it. And I'm always like, I'm not a stand-up comedian. Like, I don't do that. Like, I'd love to maybe, but that would require me to like sit down, write a set, be very comfortable with it, and then just kind of be okay with saying the same jokes over and over again. And like, to me, I'm not like, that's not really what I want to do. Like I said, like I would rather be in like sketch comedy and stuff.
Yeah, but
I do understand that in like today's current space, that it's probably like an integral step in growing as a comedian.
Absolutely.
Is doing stand-up. So it is something that I am considering and working on.
Do you know how many stand-up comedians would die to have 148,000 followers?
I have no idea.
Crazy. Because, you know, they say it takes many years, like 10 years to come like to get on the road and become a stand-up comedian to make the money. But people who have followings the size of yours, it's you get the red carpet rolled out because you don't have to build that audience. It's already there. You've already built it. But stand up is a different type of muscle. It's a whole different ball game than sketch or social media comedy. It requires real time. Like when you say you have to deliver the same joke over and over and over on stage every night. But then what you also brought up was the comedic timing, the pauses, how to talk into a microphone. You can switch it up every night. There's just so many variations when you're up there basically naked on stage.
Yeah, that's still something I am exploring. It's kind of hard because I just feel like my time right now, I don't have like a ton of it to like really sit down. I probably could, but I feel like I don't have like the most time because, just to stay relevant on like
TikTok.
these channels is like 3 to 4 videos a week. Gonna post stories and stuff. And like other creators who don't do who create different types of content, they're able to batch their content. So they're like, oh, this is a trending sound, or this is just a trend in general. I'm gonna do a bunch of these and just change the text or the preface. And then they have like a bunch of stuff in their drafts, and I have nothing in my drafts. Like everything that you see, I like make that day. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going in. And I know it's not like the greatest use of my time, which is why I'm taking a writing workshop so that I can better do those things and then work on stuff like stand up.
Stephen Ho is somebody. Do you know who he is?
Oh, yeah. I watched your guys's episode.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is one guy who's managed to leverage his social media following into stand-up comedy. He sells out everywhere he goes now.
Yeah, he's huge. He came here last month with, I forgot his name. He came here with someone else, Nurse John. I don't know if you know who that is. He was like Stephen Ho and Nurse John.
The
Forgive
Philip is
me
he
if it's.
Filipino comedian? Nurse John?
I don't know. I honestly didn't even know Stephen was Vietnamese till I saw him on your podcast. I also didn't know Linda Duong was Vietnamese until I saw her on your podcast. I'm pretty out
That
of
is
touch.
crazy. No. You're not the only one who says that. And you know, here's the crazy thing. Ali Wong is Vietnamese too.
Yeah, like, isn't she like half
Half Vietnamese, half
Vietnamese?
Taiwanese. But think about this. Is it intentional that you don't know that these people are Vietnamese? Is it that we hide our Vietnamese-ness when we're doing comedy? And what I mean by that is it a detriment to the identity of a comedian if they're leaning so heavily into their ethnicity? And I think I play with this idea sometimes when I think about like Asian comedians like Dat Phan, the earliest comedian that we had in our community. He leaned so much on this whole Vietnamese identity that it doesn't take him anywhere. You know, he leans into this identity of the comedy side of it's such a niche market for any audience that's listening to the Vietnamese jokes. It's just so tiny. And even
Right.
when you describe your sketches on social media, you're like, I mean, you've said it that it needs to be a little bit more Pan-Asian. You don't want to pigeonhole yourself by, I'm a Vietnamese woman comic. And
Right.
so the nature, I think the discussion is the nature of being pigeonholed as a Vietnamese comic. It's hard to relate for the audience if they're thinking that this is a Vietnamese person just giving Vietnamese angles. So I think a lot of people who are sort of on stage, they try to shy away from it.
I don't think I necessarily shy away from it, and I'm not sure that like everyone else shies away from it, but I mean there's also an awareness that like not a lot of people will be like, oh, I went to this restaurant to, I got bunseo today and it was really soggy and I was pissed, They don't know it's supposed to be crispy, they don't even know what it is,
Yeah, there's no context there.
right? And so I think that. And sometimes I think we just kind of want to reach beyond just like I'm more than just like a Vietnamese person, but like I do have that, like I am Vietnamese in like my bio on Instagram. I know that like other creators don't necessarily, because I do get that question. Like a lot of people ask if I'm like Filipino or Korean or Hawaiian, and I'm like, oh no, I'm just Vietnamese. So I just kind of put it up there. It's not something I shy away from, and it's not something I'm like ashamed of, but it's also like when I do like specific Vietnamese content though, like one of the videos that made me really popular on Instagram was, the down to pho, not understanding that the guy, well, I was like, and then talking about his little noodle and stuff. And so like everyone knows what pho is, but if I made a video about like if I said like ja yaw, they don't know, or like goi cua, they're not gonna know. And I've used Jodi Trans. She makes those monster spring rolls. And I've used that in a video, and they don't do quite as well with a general audience, but like Vietnamese people understand.
And you also have to know what DTF means too, like a
Yeah.
general audience to understand what down to pho means,
Yeah,
right?
right.
You got to kind of have to know what those two things are, and they're very diff they're different genre. I mean, arguably different genres of context.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, because DTF is a real thing. It's,
Yeah.
it's a real thing. And if you really understand what DTF is, you can understand what down to pho is.
Right.
And
Exactly.
so
And while I'm here and we're talking about Vietnamese food, I don't know, like one of like my Vietnamese pet peeves, or one of my pet peeves as like a Vietnamese person, is I don't know why everyone says banh mi. I just don't know why. It just kind of drives me crazy. They're like, oh, do you want to get a banh mi? And I'm like, it's BANH. It's like banh mi.
And if you want to really get technical in the north, they call it bang me. It gets even
Right.
more like swirly, right? Like, bang me.
And so I'm just like, and my friends are like, oh, do you want to get a sandwich? Because they know like if they're gonna say it wrong. And one of my favorite shows, Bob's Burgers, it doesn't help that Gene, the character in that show, sings a song and he says banh mi from Vietnam in the song. And I'm like, no one checked this.
Well, there's a thing in the zeitgeist, the American zeitgeist, when it comes to banh mi, many places spell it BAHN.
I know why.
Be
That and
because,
that perpetuates the bond.
right. And I think that misspelling, whether it was intentional or not intentional, it was an accident or whatever, you're like it's a, like you said, it's perpetuating this issue of calling it banh. And I think that over the years, it's just made it much easier to pronounce when it's BAHN, and it makes sense and phonetically for English speakers to call it bon when you flip that N in the H. And it's, I was talking to another person from England, a Vietnamese person from England on a podcast last night, and we were talking about like in the North, there was this whole movement of uneducated Northerners flipping the N and the L in language. Yeah, it's a strange phenomenon, and we're trying to figure out where it comes from, but it's the weirdest thing. Like when they say mot nghìn, they'll say mot lìn. There's different ways that people
That's so
flip N and L.
interesting.
Yeah, it's just crazy. These phonetic tricks and issues are they run rampant everywhere, and there's people that study linguists that study these trajectories and why they happen.
Yeah. No. I just tell people, I'm like, if you're gonna say just like bun, like hamburger buns, just be like bun me. Don't say bon me. Don't say that to me. I won't eat a sandwich with you if you do. I don't know why. It's just like the one thing. That drives me more crazy than when people say pho. Do you want to eat some pho? And I'm like, I know what you're talking about.
You
Sure.
know, I would love to see, I have all these aspirations to see you get down and be authentic in these. Yeah, that'd be a funny thing to watch a sketch that you put together on this banh mi thing. But I do look forward to the day that you bust out a Key and Peele sketch on your channels. That would be fascinating to see.
I working on it. Taking the class. I'm working on writing.
I'm
So
excited
like
about that.
that's right, because I feel like there's only there. I mean, like, yeah, Dear Diary, people can Dear Diary all day long, every single day. But I'm just like, I don't want to just monologue in my car every time. Like, and so I'm like slowly trying to introduce like this sketch style stuff. So like I have a Preparation H video and like a Vagisil video where I'm, introduced, or I have, Peggy and stuff with me. And that inspiration comes from like SNL style, like silly ads. And so I'm like trying to slowly bring that sort of content in without upsetting people. 'Cause people, when they expect something and then you change it, you're like, why isn't she? I remember one time I made a video and I was in my bedroom. I did a Dear Diary in my bedroom instead of my car. And people were like, why aren't you in your car? Or there, I always have a gold chain on, and I went through a breakup in February, and that necklace was from my ex. And so I didn't have a necklace on in a couple of my videos, and even in my stories, and people were like, where's your necklace? What happened to your necklace? And I was like, that's crazy that you'd want to see that, And so changing the format of my content is like a new thing that I'm slowly trying to introduce to not like upset people, I guess.
There'd probably be hundreds of ideas that you have, like similar to the your Radio Shack experience too, that I would like to see, because that's some shit that, that's like pretty crazy to hear the story of your experience working at Radio Shack over and over and over again with these older white guys that came back from the war.
And even just being a woman in that space, like they didn't listen to me. Like I had male, like I would be the only woman working and they wouldn't believe anything I had to say. There was one customer who was like, what are the difference between these wireless headphones? And I was telling him, and he goes, that doesn't make any sense. You don't know what you're talking about. And then I got really frustrated, and I knew it was because I was a woman. But I was like the manager, and so I got my colleague, and I was like, Charlie, can you please explain to this gentleman, maybe in different terms, because he's not understanding me, the difference between these wireless headphones? And it was like a frequency difference, like the megahertz were different. And then I was trying to explain how there's like two different channels. I was like, there's the 2.4 channel, there's, this one's lower frequency, it's only 900 megahertz. And so he went, and literally, because we have the same training, we're in the same store, he said the exact same thing. And I stood there, as petty as I am, I stood there. And he understood every single word Charlie said. And then I even like stepped in between them and I was like, excuse me, can you please tell me what he said differently than me
Oh
to make
shit.
you understand?
You
And he was
called him
like,
out.
yeah. And he was like, the way he said it, I just like understood better. And I was like, we literally said the same thing. And then he was like, maybe it just like clicked finally when he explained it. And I said, are you sure it's not because I'm a woman? And he's like, no. And then I like there was no one else at the store, so I like follow them to the counter, and I'm just standing there like upset because I was just tired of it, like constantly day in day out being undermined for being a woman in this space. And then Charlie was like, would you like to buy batteries with, because you have to like add on to purchases. And he's like, yeah, just add whatever. And then like he avoiding eye contact with me, and Charlie's like, would you like the extended warranty? And he's like, yeah, sure. He's like, we have the 2 year and the 3 year. He's like, the three years fine. And I was like, have a nice day, see you never. But there's experiences like that. And then I don't know why this was also very common, but like older men would like try to tickle me. They'd like reach over the counter. I don't know if this is like, I don't talk about this stuff anymore. This was so long ago, but I'm like, does this happen to other people? Like, is it just, it can't be unique to me. This person couldn't just only want to try to tickle me as a stranger ever. Like, I'm sure these other people are doing this, or these people are doing this to other people, but it's so weird.
See, if you had literally like a 30-second post on that question, that would be so fascinating to me to read the responses. You know,
Right.
because I can imagine it being a thing, you know, and it's not like it just happened once or twice to you. You're like saying that men reach over the counter and they tickle you. It's like,
They would try to tickle me, and I'd be like, what are you doing? You
that's
know, like, excuse
bizarre.
me. It is so weird. So no one's ever done that to you, is what you're telling me.
I mean, I've had my ass grabbed like many times by gay guys. That's, you know, that's,
Right.
you know, if you're at a gay club sometimes and, you know, that happens, you know.
Right,
But, you know, it's
definitely.
because I'm not with my
That's
girlfriend, you know, like going up to get a drink and I didn't go with my girlfriend. So that happens. But,
right.
and I used to work in the interior design industry and that happened to me about three times
By
in the design.
clients.
Yeah. I was in window coverings for most of my life with, I worked for my parents and growing up that happened a few times. And then gay men hitting on me constantly, but they didn't, the ass grabbing was like three times, but other than that, they didn't tickle me or anything like that.
You know, speaking of gay men, like, I'm gay, I'm a lesbian. And when I would go, I'm very shy. And like, when I would go to like the clubs and stuff when I was younger and like the bars, women wouldn't hit on me. I probably got hit on by women like two times. It was always the gay guys just wanted to be like, your hair is so pretty and like spend all night with me. And I'm like, I'm looking for a woman. And I know you ain't trying to be with me.
Yeah.
What is happening? You know? And but so I too have been hit on by a lot of gay guys.
But the tickling is where.
The tickling, yeah. I don't know if those guys were gay. But yeah, the tickling is just bizarre. I don't know why anyone would think that's appropriate to just like
No.
tickle a
Yeah.
person working at Radio Shack.
I mean, that is like assault almost, if you think about it.
Yeah, don't touch. Don't touch me.
But you know, they
They'd
say
be like,
that, like,
oh,
I
and
have
I'm just
little kids and I would never allow grown-ups to tickle my kids because that's
right.
the like the next stage for molestation. That's what people say, is that tickling leads to that other, you know, the next step. So like, you know, as a parent, you always are looking out for grown-ups that are trying to do that shit.
Right. And I think that like at least when I was younger, it was like so normal to like, oh, you know, and it's changed a lot in general to where I don't have kids, but like I have nieces and nephews and stuff like that. And I'm seeing like when we were younger, like we had to just kind of be obedient and like
Deal with it.
submissive. And like if someone, an adult wants to tickle you, they'll tickle you. If they want to kiss your cheek, if they want you to hug them, like you have to do that. And so like I was molested as a child for years by my grandma's boyfriend, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't tell anyone. You know, I had shame, I had guilt, like I felt like it was my fault. I was in elementary school, and this is, you know, you're just supposed to like listen to the adult. And so like I'm glad that like at least our generation has kind of woken up to like don't like teach your kids like that they can have boundaries, that if they're not comfortable with an adult touching them, or that adult shouldn't be touching them in those certain ways. And I'm not saying that like my family didn't protect me, they didn't know what was going on, and like, but I feel like if we had those standards back then, where it's like, if an adult's making you uncomfortable, like you don't have to be around them, you don't have to listen to them. But you know, back then it was just kind of like, listen to your elders, you know. And so, I totally understand what you mean by like not letting people tickle your kids.
Yeah, you have to be just on top of it. You have to really be watching when your own kids, are with other adults. You know, I mean, I'm a little bit too vigilant when it comes to that. You know, I'm very like a hawk.
Is
To my
can you be
detriment
too
sometimes.
vigilant though?
A
Can you
little bit,
be?
yeah. Can you? I don't know. Because sometimes it might hinder their own development, and you know, I'm just always watching, and you know, it might be suffocating. I don't know. I but I'm terrified of that ever happening to my children. You know, scary, really scary. What, Tame, I didn't want to end on such a sour note.
No,
but
it's okay.
You know, I really appreciate you reaching out. And, you know, I always appreciate comedians and the creative side of how difficult the creative side is for comedians in the space that you live in. So thank you so much for sharing that with me today.
Thanks for letting me share that with you.
Thanks, Tamay.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.